Sliwa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Die, USOB. Die, USOB.
Soon, baby, soon.
In fact, it's the lead headline in today's New York Daily News. Die already, you devil. As Charlie Manson once again is rushed to a hospital in California, although he's in grave condition, he continues to hold on. As we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. And Julianne Huddy is in the house.
Hello, Mr. Sliwa. We have so much to talk about.
I know one who really likes the Satan-like figures that are represented by Charlie Manson with his Nazi swastika that he carved
I like the Satan-like figures.
He is very Satan-like.
I don't like him. Where did you get that I like him?
I'm just saying
don't spread rumors like that. That's horrific.
There are many people in the music world who idolized him, put him up on a pedestal.
Well, he idolized them. I mean, he was best buddies for a time with Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys. I think he lived at his house.
Yeah.
At one point. How those documentaries are also interesting. I can watch them over and over again.
Guns N' Roses, they worshipped him. Marilyn Manson, and so many who created songs in tribute to him. In fact, Charlie Manson, while in jail, put out an album. And these major groups contributed to that album their songs.
Which is so completely bizarre and wrong. But he fancied himself a pretty good singer. I mean, and he had that charisma, which is why he was able to have his family, you know, the Mansonites, follow him and do all these horrific things to the LaBiancas, to Sharon Tate and company. But, I mean, he did have some musical talent. That's why he and Dennis from the Beach Boys hooked up.
But remember, his goal was to create a race war in the United States. This guy hated blacks, hated Hispanics. He might as well have been a one percenter in jail. Who knows? Maybe when he was in Vacaville, the state prison in California for the criminally insane. Remember I used to see Vacaville on my way up and down from San Francisco to Sacramento when I was organizing Guardian Angels there. And all the local angels would say, yeah, that's where Charlie is. That's where Charlie is. That's where every year, remember, Geraldo Rivera would go for his annual visit and interview with Charlie Manson.
I'll tell you, my father was a producer for, I don't know if it was CBS or NBC at the time, but he and I think it was either Tom Snyder from The Tomorrow Show or Charlie Rose from Night Watch went out to the prison and did an interview, you know, one-on-one with Charles Manson. And my dad was there and he said it was just literally evil incarnate walking into the room. He said you just got chills up and down your spine. And you just knew, I mean, obviously you know what the man did, but you got that there was that weird, evil charisma that came just, you know, soaking out of his pores.
And so the question I have for all of our listeners, why did all these groups have this insatiable desire to fet Charlie Manson, to put him up on a pedestal, to create this image that, although he was Satan-like, that they were worshipers of his?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about the bands and the songs, but I would imagine it's less worshiping him and more cult of personality, recognizing the cult of personality and how the fact that this man who is just some dude, you know, from California, who is kind of a train wreck and had a horrible family life, became such a monster and was able to lead relatively seemingly normal people into such chaos and evil.
Well, let's find out from our many listeners out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Cult of personality, or because he's a freaky deaky rock and rollers, they're just always looking for Satan-like figures
you stop it.
To extol the virtues of. Now, speaking of Charlie Manson, his followers went on a killing spree.
Yeah.
And one of those that they killed was Sharon Tate,
mm-hmm.
who was the
beautiful,
wife.
Beautiful woman.
Right. Actress and the wife of the director, Roman Polanski, at the time.
And she was pregnant at the time.
And at that moment in life, everyone felt for Roman Polanski, his loss.
Naturally.
People sat shiver for him, not realizing that at that moment he was snacking on underage actresses at that same time. A few years ago in the Oscar ceremonies, he was given a standing ovation, even though he's a pedophile on a pedestal and in exile in Paris.
Well, that rankled people because nobody forgot the fact that he had some, you know, affair with a 14-year-old or whatever it was. I mean, people were pissed off about that when they saw the standing ovation. And, of course, it gave credibility to everybody that says Hollywood's filled with a bunch of weirdos.
Well, ever since then, that standing ovation at the Oscar ceremonies, other women have come forward and said, I was an underage actress at the time. I was an underage model of clothing that Roman Polanski preyed on mm-hmm. by feeding me Quaaludes and then all of a sudden raping me.
And so, Bill Cosby-like.
Yeah, yeah. So it's notice how that tide has turned, and now it's a tsunami. We're going to be talking about Al the Perv Franken later on, the senator of Minnesota, and what he did to one of our colleagues at KABC. She is the news broadcaster at our sister station out in Los Angeles.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. Big, big story.
And all of this sort of like just culminating around the perv of all pervs, Judge Roy Moore, as many of his colleagues who were very supportive of him, including our own Mark Levin, seem to be now distancing themselves.
They're racing to jump off a sinking ship is what I tweeted, and I got a lot of flack for that, but it's true. I mean, Sean Hannity as well. You know, there was this, oh, well, you know, give you 24 hours, and then all of a sudden Roy Moore writes a letter to Sean Hannity defending himself, and then all of a sudden Sean Hannity's backing off a little bit and giving him a little bit more time. It's just, well, I mean, it's not about political parties, people. Sexual predators they come from all different colors and stripes and ideologies and religions. Stop with the political partisan nonsense. It's not about parties. Stop cheering when it's a Democrat that happens to be accused of being a predator. Well, Stop cheering when it's a Republican. Who cares?
I'm tired of the mishigash because yesterday it was a double-headed day for me. First off, it was America's Recycling Day. And if you go to the Curtis Sliwa Facebook page, the
He's
Curtis Show.
Really into this recycling stuff, by the way.
On WABC, you'll see how I was recycling long before there was even the term recycling or ecology or Earth Day or any of that. You were considered a junk man, and I've continued since. Every time you deposit your papers into mm-hmm. the trash can here, what do? I follow
he
up behind you.
He freaks out and grabs them and takes them out of the trash can.
Right. I'm totally into recycling.
Because I'm an anti-Earth person, apparently.
And then, as everybody knows, yesterday was the final showing of the Guardian Angel documentary here in New York City
at the Doc Film Festival. May I take over now?
Of course,
okay. I went to this viewing, the showing at the IFC Theater, which was great. Saw Curtis outside. I brought some friends of mine, Robert Moses from Fox 5, some friends of mine, producers over there. I have to tell you, Curtis, I've said on the show that I think you are a heroic man, but nothing prepared me for what I saw yesterday in that documentary. It was so well done. The video, the archive video from, you know, when you were first out there walking the streets, first of all, you were so hot. You're such a handsome guy. I mean, the ladies must have been throwing themselves at you, but I digress. But just seeing the things that you did and really hearing from your own mouth how difficult it was, and seeing some of the Guardian Angels sitting there in the theater and hearing them laughing and hearing, it was a packed theater, just hearing everybody's response. I was so proud of you. And I told my husband, I'm like, you know what? I have to tell you, I was, you know, of course I'm thrilled to be here with you, but I really feel honored to work with you. It is really an honor. You are an exceptional person, and you really are a hero, not just for New York, but, you know, for the world. You really try to do the right thing. And I implore everybody, please try to find out where you can see this when it's coming out again. Curtis, obviously, will keep you updated.
In fact, it's going to travel to a group of other artsy-fartsy film festivals
Good.
Around the world. And once it's completely showcased to a world audience, because we have Guardian Angels now all over the world in 13 countries, 130 cities,
mm-hmm.
Then hopefully it ends up on a Netflix or an Amazon
it will, 100%.
Or HBO. And
no doubt.
Be available for regular watching whenever you want. And it's called Vigilante. It's the documentary about
the incredible true story.
Right. The first 13 years, which was a baptism in fire for the Guardian Angels and yours truly. So we take you from the start of the Subway Patrol, the Magnificent 13, who were the 13 who were workers of mine, closers at the Mickey D's that I was night manager of in the Bronx, to the start of the Guardian Angels soon after, which extended our patrols, to the crackdown on crack in the 80s when crack just devoured our city.
And meanwhile, you guys are doing this and you're getting more and more attention. You're getting more and more members. But you're doing this in the face of the New York Police Department, who they weren't happy with you. You're doing it in the face of Ed Koch, who was very resistant and a troublemaker for you, the mob. And you're doing it without any weapons. I mean, just going out there on the streets, putting your lives out on the line, and really not getting the appreciation in a lot of ways that you should have been receiving.
And then you can see when we were doing crack raids in Hunts Point and
this
other parts
crazy.
Of the Bronx.
I had no idea that you did this stuff.
Yeah, we would rob crack dealers, steal their drugs, steal their money. And then we would publicly destroy the drugs. We'd find groups of kids, and naturally they thought this, you can't destroy drugs, you know.
Yeah, they were like, they didn't care about, you know, whether or not they got a beat down. They were just like, give us that drug back, please, God.
Right.
Don't dump it into
so
the grate.
So we would destroy it. We would put on a formal public theater. We would bundle the money, and we would take it to soup kitchens that were run and present it to whatever religious group was running those soup kitchens at that time. So we were like modern-day Robin Hoods. And the cops at that point didn't care because things were so out of control. They were just wondering when they would have to pull the gurneys out and take us all to the nearby hospital or to the mortuary.
And there were Guardian Angels who were killed in the line of duty.
Yes, there were six who had been killed in the line of duty, 36 seriously injured. And then we start and we end with my battles, my wars against the Gottis and the Gambinos.
Oh, and when you hear this, and there's some great audio of Gotti Jr., I believe it was. I mean, and there were some other stories. We can't tell everybody everything. You need to see this documentary. But man, I was sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm so enraged. I want to just go on the radio tomorrow and just go off on these Gottis. But I'll let you guys go see the film. But you know what I was thinking the entire time I was there? And I was like looking around. I'm like waiting for the doors to be busted open and having there be, you know, a shootout.
You mean a St. Valentine's Day massacre, right?
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. Oh, my. Yeah. But, I know. But I would have had your back.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's great video and great footage from that era put together by David Wexler, who is the director, producer, writer, and the editor.
Phenomenal job. Really.
Brad Coleman. In fact, I came up with a treasure trove of old VCR tapes and Betamax. I couldn't figure out how they could convert Betamax.
Well, they have places in the city where you can go and bring all that stuff and they transfer it over.
And they did a magnificent job. And it's real. I'm very proud of the documentary Vigilante because it really captures the essence of that era.
It does.
And For hipsters and millennials, particularly like Justin B. Love, the invader here from Alabama, and Brian Mongalooch, they have no idea.
I brought some friends, as I said, and one of them is the husband of a girl, the woman that did makeup for you when you were at Fox 5 in the mornings. She's since left. And her husband, and he brought a friend. They worked together, and this friend is up from Buffalo. He recognized who you were, but he didn't know a lot about this, you know, the Guardian Angels and all the details and all the history. And I mean, they were blown away afterwards. They were like, wow. I mean, everybody said the same thing. That guy's a hero. They're all heroes.
Well, it was a great turnout. A lot of WABC listeners. I was proud to stop and meet and greet them. And as we look at the calendar today, 28 days until I go under the knife again. That's right. And none of them, nobody online would donate their colon to me. Nobody. They all
don't we need our colons?
No, hey, look, you can get a colostomy bag.
Oh,
don't worry about
okay.
it.
Okay, well.
So, hey, Justin, you want to donate your colon to me? And not your semicolon.
Young.
Not a semicolon.
He's young and fresh.
What about you, Brian Mongalooch? You probably have two in there that you don't even know about.
I think that guy drinks too much. I don't know.
But anyway, 28 days from now, I'll be going under the knife December 13th at Columbia Presbyterian to finally get this colitis, ileitis, Crohn's disease dealt with once and
for
all.
God, I'm so happy for you.
Which is all the result of getting shot five times with hollow point bullets back in 1992 by the Gambinos, led by the Gottis at that time. Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games.
Come on, die already, you devil. Charlie Manson, die. Anyway, let's go quickly to the phones. It's Carter who's calling from Westchester. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC, Carter.
Carter.
How are you?
I've had better days, Carter.
Hey, first of all, you know, I'm a big fan. I've been a fan for a long time. I go way back with you. I mean, even back to like the, used to watch your, when you would peel Morton Downey Jr. That's how far back.
Whoa.
In fact, there was a piece in the documentary.
You're giving away the entire documentary.
Don't worry about it.
Well, you know what? I tried to get there. I just couldn't get off of work. I was trying to get to the Wednesday showing.
Well, I tell you what, Carter, we're going to keep everyone posted as in terms of where you can actually see it within the convenience of your home or on your laptop, and hopefully that'll be soon.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
It'll be on Netflix, Curtis, I'm sure.
Yes.
Don't kill me. Don't jump down my throat. I actually had to pull over on the highway because I want to get into this with you. The things that was with the whole Manson situation. Now, I don't think of me as weirdo, but I studied Manson for a long time. I have a lot of books on Manson, documentary on Manson, the family and everything. There's a lot of interesting things that surrounded that. Like what you said in regards to him being a musician.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an interesting fact that people don't know is that not only was he a great musician, he was, had he not took the left turn into the murderous route, he was supposed to be the, what's the guy's name? Johnny's in the Bass, the thing about the government. What's the single?
Oh, Dylan? Like a
he
Bob Dylan?
He was supposed to be the next Dylan.
Because of his writing and his lyrics.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the music industry was so caught up with his lyrics, words, some of the songs.
Carter, correct me if I'm wrong. You're an African-American, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. He wanted to start a race war. That was his intent in America. You aware of that?
Yes, I am. But see, here's the problem with that also. It wasn't like, because earlier you said he hated blacks, and that wasn't the case with the hatred of blacks. What it was he looked at, well, he based it off of the Beatles song, Helter Skelter. He looked at the race war as the blacks were superior than the whites at the time, as far as physicalities. Right? So you figured
This is eugenics.
This is right. He's right.
But listen, here's the problem, though.
I saw this in a documentary.
I've heard this with a lot of people, black and white, but the thing is, because he felt the blacks were physically superior than the whites at the time, he figured if he started a race war, that the blacks would retaliate and overpower the whites. But here's the problem. He felt that the blacks couldn't govern themselves. So he was building a family so that after the race war was over and the blacks defeated the whites, him and the family would come in.
The great white people would guide the blacks who were incapable of leading themselves.
Well, he was a nutcase. Bwana, obviously, we know the guy was crazy. That was very interesting.
You know, it's like out of a Tarzan movie.
I mean, the guy was nuts. He was a complete mental case. But Carter's right.
You wanted to mention a case in Long Island.
Yeah, I did. Just the case of this woman. It's actually a week ago today that this young woman who had so much ahead of her. She's 18 years old. She was buried on her 19th birthday, by the way. Taranjit Parmar. She was in a minor fender bender. Hempstead Turnpike by Gardner's Avenue, I believe it's called. She pulls over. There was a red truck that she hit. She gets out of the truck. The red truck runs her over, and she's dead. And they cannot find this red truck. Now, there are some things circulating on Facebook that there might have been a spotting, but it was a 2018 Jeep that she was in. This was Thursday at 5 p.m. It was a red pickup truck. If you were around that area, you had to have seen something. It's 5 o'clock on
a Thursday.
There were
so many red light cameras out in Long Island.
Yeah,
I know. How could they not have picked that up?
Well, they stopped in a gas station. Apparently, there was some footage there. But, yeah, you would think that there would be, especially after a week. But for whatever reason, they don't have it. Somebody has to be driving around right now who might have been in that area who had to have seen something.
Well, good.
If you did, say something, please.
Good looking out, Juliet Huddy. Anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Born in the USA. 12:39, Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello, Curtis.
And you probably like Bruce Springsteen.
At the risk of alienating much of our audience, I don't like Bruce Springsteen, and I don't like John Bon Jovi.
Good.
Their
great.
Music. I'm sure they're wonderful people, but
I hate them. I hate them. I especially hate Springsteen, who claimed that he's a farmer now in order to reduce his property taxes in New Jersey, that he's a farmer.
Right. No, that's
farmer
that's very,
Springsteen.
That's very that's actually ubiquitous these days in that area down there. He lives in the Rumson, Red Bank area. Oh, yeah. The very wealthy people are. That's a nice little loophole that they're taking advantage of.
Let me ask you a question. Is it because he's into homegrown products, hydroponics?
Potentially. And look, I mean, they have a new governor in New Jersey, and that stuff will probably become legal
and
soon.
Murphy loves
Could be a nice big farm of
Bon
marijuana.
But
Mary Jane.
We're going to flip the script from New Jersey to Long Island. Now, get this story. This is a mind-boggler.
This is a...
A Long Island teacher was removed from the classroom after he posted on Facebook claiming he had failed two students for refusing to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, you would have thought, okay, did this occur in the last school semester?
Yeah, he's posting on Facebook, so obviously he's getting all riled up about something.
This occurred 10 years ago.
A decade ago. But this guy, Stephen Solomon is his name. He's a teacher, and he is so proud of the fact, as he shows on Facebook, as he's writing to a friend of his, that when he was teaching about 10 years ago, you know, he would require his kids to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and a couple of them wouldn't. So he went to the principal, and the principal said, look, you cannot make them stand. He goes back to his room. He told the students that standing for the flag is showing respect, which we all agree. We love that. But the fact is, these kids were like, sorry, we're not going to do it. And he...
What were they, Jehovah Witness kids?
I don't know what they were. He didn't go on. But remember, he's writing this in a Facebook post, which reaches all sorts of people. And then other people comment on it. And then they share it. And then it gets all over the place. And now he's in big trouble because he ended up failing these students and joking about it in this post 10 years later. Oh, and he called them suckers.
What did they end up getting?
They got a 63. And he said, you know, normally I would have just let them go. I would have passed them. And we're joking around a 63. Wait, you'd pass a 63. But anyway... But he said, I failed him.
Well, here's part of the audio rendition of his posts on Facebook as he's talking about why he wanted these kids to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Because I want kids to have respect and stand for the pledge and respect the people in this country. They want to try to suspend me and fire me? What message is that?
Sounds like Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. They're trying to run him out of the NFL now.
The message it shows is that you're not really familiar with the Constitution.
Well, here's Steve Solomon saying, I never put students down.
It was name-calling. I mean, use the word suckers. Use the word unpatriotic.
Not to these students, to goofing off to a third person.
But that's not okay, though.
I never put down any kid I ever taught. I bring kids up. I build the kids up.
Well, this is what he said in his post. I know God has a sense of humor because both of these unpatriotic kids both ended up with a 63 average. I would have passed them if it were different circumstances, but I had them both back in homeroom class, and when I asked the class to stand, these two suckers were the first ones to stand up because they were failed by
him. Well, I asked a question. He gave them a 63. It's probably because they weren't good students to begin with. So maybe he would have given them a 65, which is like passing now, right? What's the big deal? I mean, it's only two grade points.
Well, the big deal is that he failed them.
Yeah, because they didn't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance. And they didn't have a religious exemption. They were claiming they were Jehovah Witnesses.
You're allowed to do that. This is America. Whether we like it or not, whether we think it's disrespectful, which it is, or not, they have every right to not stand if they don't want to.
Well, that's,
or say the Pledge
that's
of Allegiance if they
disagree.
Don't want to.
And then here is one, a student, who said, if we wrote that, we would be in trouble.
If it's wrong for a student to go on Facebook and say anything about a teacher, we would automatically get a consequence or in trouble for it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, let me pose you the question. This occurred 10 years ago. It came about because the Long Island teacher fessed up on Facebook.
Well, he bragged about it on Facebook, and he thought it was really funny.
Well, in light of what's happening in the NFL... all of these overpaid guys who decide to sit on their tuchus, stay in the clubhouse, take a knee, hold arms in solidarity instead of just standing erect, putting their hand over the heart during the playing of the national anthem before the beginning kickoff.
Wait. What do you think should happen to this guy? So he's been suspended. I mean, do you think he should be fired? Do you think suspension was adequate?
No, this is ridiculous.
I don't think it's ridiculous at all. The fact is he showed no respect, not 10 years ago, just recently, for students themselves. I mean, whether they're troublemaking students or not, don't go on a public Facebook page or even a private Facebook page and start, you know, mouthing off about your kids. That's every parent's nightmare, is that, you know, their kids are being targeted by some guy who doesn't act professional.
When did this specifically take place, the incident he's referring to?
Supposedly 10 years ago.
Okay. You're now going to suspend the guy for something that happened 10 years ago?
I wouldn't suspend him. I would definitely take him aside and say, you will be suspended if we ever see anything like this again.
All right, well, let's turn it over to our listeners here at WABC. To suspend or not to suspend, that's the question. I would give him the equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor for teachers for enforcing the basics of what I know was imposed upon me when I was a young little whippersnapper going to school, both parochial and public school, is that you stand for the national anthem as long as there's no religious exemption. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He went to the principal and he talked to the principal about this. The principal himself at the time said, you cannot make them stand up. You cannot basically, you know, crucify them for not standing. Even though you find it disrespectful, we all find it disrespectful, I think, most of us. But the fact is, they're allowed to do it.
Yeah, the principal told me not to make them stand. I told the students standing for the flag was showing respect for the men of the military who risked their lives to protect our freedoms.
Which is true, which I agree with.
They said, we didn't ask them to. The next day, they refused to stand, saying, they didn't have to. I told them, that is true, and that's what makes this country great. But that I didn't have to pass them either. Well, I know God has a sense of humor because both of these unpatriotic kids both ended up with a 63 average, and under ordinary circumstances, I would have passed them both. Instead, I failed them both. Well, the next year, miraculously, I had them both back in my homeroom class, and when I asked the class to stand, these two suckers were the first to stand up.
True story. And he's very happy that he wrote about this.
Modification. These two jerky boys understood that you had to stand.
But they don't have to. That's the point. The principal told him, don't make them stand. They sound like little brats is what they sound like.
You know, and the disruptors. Principal sounded like Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL football.
I love the way you pronounce things. Goodell.
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 And
testosterone.
Goodell. And Jerry Jones. This teacher sounds like Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, who other owners were upset at.
You know, I used to work with Roger Goodell's wife. Jane Skinner. She was an anchor at Fox News for many years, and a lovely, lovely woman. I mean, the type that bakes cookies and brings them in to
Roger
staff,
Goodell. He sucks.
Wife.
He sucks.
Okay, well,
anyway, let's go
know,
to Bob
know.
In Trenton. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at
Trenton.
WABC. Bobby.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out another point. It's not just the fact that the kids didn't stand. It's the fact that they spited the teacher in the face.
Yep.
And then the principal didn't even back the teacher by saying, no, these kids should stand. They were disrespectful to the flag. Which I definitely know everybody should stand for national anthem. I think we should suspend sports players for not standing. They're making a public statement, and they're spiting the world.
I think that the problem that I have is that he's 10 years later, he's on Facebook bragging to his friends and thinking it's really cool. You're a professional. You're not supposed to do stuff like that.
No. You should be
Elevate
bragging.
Elevate yourself.
Should be bragging. Go to Harry in Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here at WABC. Harry?
How are you?
I've had better days.
Thanks for taking my call. My question is, if they got a 63, if he did nothing, they failed. Isn't it at the teacher's discretion at that point? Let's say the kid's a wise guy through class. Well, then you don't get the 2 points and you don't pass.
Right.
I don't know why he was suspended. I don't know if it was because of the Facebook post or because of what he did retroactively 10 years ago. It seems to me that maybe the administrators are suspending him. I don't think he was fired. They're suspending him because of his Facebook post, and that
which
it's inappropriate.
It's sort of like, wait a second, that was 10 years ago. It's a Facebook post. Mind your own business. What are they, KGB? What are they, like Vladimir Putin?
Listen, when you've got a bunch of kids in your class and your parents are concerned about the way they're being treated, it's probably not the best idea to go ranting on Facebook and acting like a child.
Let's go to Bill in Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here at WABC. Billy?
Hey, Bill.
Yes, Curtis. Listen, Curtis, two quick points. Before you go into the hospital, could you exert all the influence that you have to make sure that Juliette Huddy is your co-host from that one?
I'm scared where that was going.
She is absolutely wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
Second point, as a retired New York City teacher, I don't know what it's like out in the island, but in New York City, you cannot fail a kid because of behavior. It's strictly based on the kid's academic performance. So theoretically, a kid could really be a pain or not stand for the flag, but could get a 90 average if his marks so showed.
Well, yeah, but Bill, I have a feeling these kids were on the cusp of just passing, and then he bumped them below 65, which is in most schools now the normal grade of passing. Because I think if they were kids who were in the 80s or the 90s, he wouldn't have taken
that
extreme
action. Well, he said, this is what he wrote on Facebook. He said, both of these unpatriotic kids ended up with a 63 average. Under ordinary circumstances, I would have passed them.
Yeah, would have
been instead, I failed them. So he basically, he was like, guess what?
Well, guess what?
You're toast.
Kids, there are consequences for your actions. Tough noogies. Our number's 1-800-848-WABC. Back to the phones. Juliette Huddy in the house.
Hello.
And it's Mike from Brooklyn. Welcome to WABC. Mike?
How you doing, Curtis? I'm the original vigilante. You know us. Listen, we met you at Atlantic Antic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you have a great business there, plumbing and heating.
Yeah, that's us. That's us. That's, we're your namesake. Listen, you know, to be a patriot, to be patriotic is a choice. You know, these kids today, I served in Vietnam. I became real patriotic when I was over there because my brothers in arms, they had my back. These kids today, I think they really got to bring that draft back, even if they stay home and just get a little common sense put into their heads. It's going to make a big difference.
He's talking about the Uniondale School Board, who they're currently investigating Stephen Solomon, who's a teacher at Uniondale High School, because he posted something on Facebook where he basically bragged about flunking two kids who didn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay, well, there you go. Out of it. You know, what he should have done, honestly, is when they started to... The card started crumbling. He probably should have just said, oh, I was just making it up. You know, this was just me being, you know, a bravado and bragging on Facebook.
Well, that's it. That Facebook is a cancer.
It is.
So you wanted him to lie, huh?
Totally. He should have lied.
Like members of the House and the U.S. Senate do on a regular basis.
Lie.
About them being pervs.
And lie some more.
And then there's money that's paid out in order to keep everyone hush, hush, mush, mush. And now we see that Senator Al Franken
is
cold-busted. Up next.
Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
This is breaking news on 77 WABC New York.
Oh, unfortunately, the capo di tutti, the most criminal of all U.S. senators up on the Hill, Bobby Menendez of Hudson County. A mistrial has been declared in
not,
the
not
case.
Not really a shocker here.
Well, I mean, think of it. Here was a guy who was going to the DR, Melgin, his benefactor, his Medici. It was a quid pro quo. He was bringing in floozies for Melgin, a married man, so he could have gumadas here, foreign women who couldn't get their visas without the help of his very dear cumbadichich, Bobby Menendez. And then Melgin was flying Bobby Menendez to the DR so he could have sex with underage hookers in the DR, who then complained on YouTube that he was such a cheapskate he didn't even tip them.
So, I have to tell you, it's a mistrial that has been literally just declared, but I have to tell you, I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg for Senator Menendez. I think that there are other things that are going to come out. I know personally of a person who has some claims against him, And I think it's only a matter of time before the start.
Oh, he's a perv. Just look at Bobby Menendez. You can see he's a perv.
Just
but
look at him.
He's
you can't
be
a look at somebody and tell they're. Well,
oh,
I guess
yes, you can.
Yeah, you kind of can.
Yes, you can. That's I mean, Judge Roy Moore, he's a perv. You can see that. Harvey Weinstein, he's a perv.
But what about?
You can look to see a reemergence in the cloakroom of the U.S. Senate of the perv, Bobby Menendez, free of all charges. Joining the latest perv mm-hmm. to make the hit list, Al Franken.
Yeah.
And they will embrace one another because they are Democrats
well,
and supporters of one another.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard about this, but on the heels of fellow comedian Louis C.K. issuing an apology, now the latest senator to issue an apology, as you just mentioned, is Al Franken, who has been accused of groping a woman who actually works at our sister station out in Los Angeles.
Yes, KABC.
Her name is Leanne Tweeden, and she wrote a really interesting and disturbing piece for the ABC website. You can read it yourself, KABC.com. But basically, she talks about how years ago she was on a USO tour, and among the people there was Al Franken, who was supposed to be, you know, kind of the comedian and the headliner of the tour. They were rehearsing some event, some little skit that was supposed to happen, and he wanted to go in and kiss her. She said, you know, we really don't need to rehearse this, Al. It's all right. And he insisted on it. And next thing you know, he leans in for the kiss, rehearsing the skit, and he grabs her head, you know, and sticks his tongue down her throat.
Well, with this long apology that Al Franken probably had his staff write for him.
It sounds very much Louis C.K.ian.
He wrote, though, while I don't remember the rehearsal for the skit as Leanne does, is Al Franken originally from Alabama, like Judge Roy Moore and Jeff Sessions, who can't seem to remember things?
Perhaps.
But in fact, let's go to the audio tape of the accuser, who is a fellow colleague of ours at KABC Radio, as she talks about the perv, Senator Al Franken.
We rehearse the line, and I'm coming towards him, and he comes up, and he grabs me, and he puts his hand behind my head, and he aggressively comes in, and he mashes his mouth up against mine, and he sticks his tongue in my mouth. And as it happens so fast, and he puts his tongue in my mouth, and his mouth is just wet and slimy, and to this day, I call him fish lips, okay, because it's disgusting.
Coho lips.
She said, you know, she actually wrote at the time, and this is something, of course, they're already coming out now. She said, at the time, I didn't want to cause trouble. We were in the middle of a war zone. I understand this. She says, we're in the middle of a war zone. It was the first show of this holiday tour. I was a professional. I felt like I could take care of myself. I told a few of the others on the tour what he had done. They knew how I felt about it. But it's the same story time and time again. You don't want to say anything because you don't want to rock the boat. You kind of feel like, I don't know, you know, maybe I can handle this. But you don't realize how incredibly inappropriate and wrong it is.
And if I am to be corrected, she was married at the time.
I think she was dating, but it's now her husband.
But Al Franken, I think, was married.
That's what she says, yeah.
So the point is, here's a married guy. He sticks his tongue down the mouth of a woman who has a committed relationship with a boyfriend. He knows this.
Under the guise of rehearsing a skit.
Yeah, and somehow he gets his jollies off, sticking his tongue down her mouth. She goes on to describe it.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture of me sleeping in my gear on the plane, and there's Al Franken literally in the photo grabbing my boobs with his hands as if he's grabbing my breasts. And looking at the camera and, like, smiling, laughing with this smirk on his face.
This pisses me off. When you see this picture, I'm sorry. She's sleeping, and it is so sick looking. This guy, he's issued an apology, but frankly, the apology rings very, very hollow to me. He knew exactly what he was doing. And she said that after this initial rehearsal of the kiss, she said pretty much for the rest of those 2 weeks, she had no alone time with him. Their dialogue was stinted, and she avoided him as much as possible. She said that he, though, repaid her with petty insults, including drawing devil horns on, you know, a headshot as she's trying to do some, you know, signatures for the troops. And so on the way home, he does this thing with this picture.
Yeah, she's asleep. She's on that C-37 transport, I believe it was. She has her Kevlar vest on, her helmet. She's fatigued because they had been going morning, noon, and night. So here's Al Franken peering into the camera while he has his hands on her boobs.
I mean, this is, I'm sorry.
Right, but remember, somebody had to take the photograph. There were others on the plane.
It was a staff person doing it. I mean, obviously you're like, oh, Al Franken, isn't that funny? But the thing is, you've already had a bad situation with this woman. Stay away from her. She obviously did not appreciate your creepiness. Leave her alone and let it go. But instead, he had to be petulant. And this is what these predators
now
do.
Ladies,
they start to make your life a living hell.
He is submitting himself to an ethics investigation. What an oxymoron. Before the U.S. Senate and Mitch, I love my Kentucky bourbon, McConnell, who, along with Speaker Ryan in the House and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, will not reveal the names that were stated the other day by the congresswoman who says there is a Democrat and there is a Republican in the House, they're still sitting, who perved on women, who sexually assaulted women. And then they had a confidentiality agreement with those women. They were
non-disclosure,
paid off,
NDAs, as everybody calls them.
Right. They were paid off with money from a slush fund that most in the House didn't even know existed. Now, we know that Schumer knows who these two are. We know Nancy Pelosi knows who the two are. We know that Ryan does. We know that Mitch McConnell does.
I mean, this is sick.
And they refuse to divulge the names.
This is sick. It's the same thing as a company, for instance, Fox News, allowing Bill O'Reilly to re-sign a contract with a provision in there, a secret provision, saying that if he gets any more allegations against him, it has to go to court. For him to be fired. I mean, it's what is wrong with this country?
Our numbers.
I'm so glad people are coming out.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Now, question.
Yeah.
Because, Juliette Huddy, you were one of many women who signed a confidentiality agreement with Fox News Channel over the actions of Bill O'Reilly towards you.
I can't discuss anything having to do with me.
The confidentiality agreement has now come onto the radar screen because
yes.
It prevents you from saying anything. Clearly, the women who are violated by the congressman in the House, I would encourage them to come forward.
I feel like all women who have non-disclosure agreements should come forward.
Right.
I really
it should be
do.
Like a universal press conference and dare the violators to go after them. Now, it's a lot easier in the private sector to go after somebody like yourself. But could you imagine the sitting congressman who then would try to sue them, or the House try to sue them for breaking the confidentiality agreement? That would never happen.
Victims often sign these agreements because they, again, I've said this before, they're going up against, in their minds, a machine, like a major news corporation or the United States government. So they're scared to do anything other than sign and just go away quietly. But you know, yeah, this stuff needs to end. Women should all get together, or victims, I should say, because there are men involved in this as well who are victims, should all get together. These non-disclosure agreements should be kicked to the curb, and we should all get out there and start talking.
Defy it. In fact,
worry about yourself. You're being bankrupted.
I notice in your particular case, there's a guy out there somewhere in New Jersey, a former elected official, I think, to the Assembly, who wrote something on his Facebook page, and O'Reilly, instead of shutting up and just accepting the fact that he's a perv and should be out at that same rehab clinic that Harvey Weinstein and now apparently Kevin Spacey is going to in Arizona, is deciding he's going to sue that former assemblyman for how dare you post anything on your Facebook.
Yeah, the assemblyman Michael Panter posted a Facebook message about how he knew his ex-girlfriend, who was working for O'Reilly at the time, was being harassed and other things that were going on. Yeah, now he's being sued for $5 million, apparently. But here's the thing. You know, there are so many people that still are just adamant about sticking up for these men when there are so many people that have been corroborating these stories about how horrible these men are. And they all, it's all about party politics, and it makes me crazy.
And
if you reduce this issue to, to a sexual harassment issue, to nothing but a fight over politics, parties, you take the legitimacy and credibility out of your argument. Screw ideology. Stop bitching about that. You're about your party being treated unfairly. Stop, protecting Roy Moore. Stop protecting, this person, that person. It's about a sexual predator. Not the right, not the left, not a Democrat, not a Republican, not a conservative, not a liberal. It's about a predator. Stop with the
now,
political parties.
Do we think that Senator Al Franken, that this was a one offer?
I doubt it.
Anyway, let's go to Joe, first up in the queue in Fishkill. Welcome to Curtis and Juliette Huddy here at WABC, Joe.
Hey, guys. Juliette, I don't want you to take offense to this, and I just want to preface what I'm about to say. I don't agree with anything that these guys, you should treat a lady like a lady. and you know, you should always be respectful. But I just sometimes I got to wonder with some of these cases where, you know, and I thought about this when one time Joy Behar actually said this, you know, in some of these cases, if the guy didn't look like Al Franken, but he looked more like George Clooney or Brad Pitt, would the person be seen as a victim or would it be sometimes seen as a victory, especially in like Hollywood and stuff like that?
Victim or victory?
I see your point, but when you feel this woman was dating somebody, this Leanne Tweed and the one that's accusing Al Franken of groping her, she was dating somebody, she was in a relationship, and she didn't want it. I mean, I see your point, but a creep is a creep.
And yeah.
I agree with you.
Like, I'm just,
is it a romantic gesture? You know?
Joy Behar's the one who brought that up one time. That, you know, it's kind of like a guy seen more as a creep if he kind of looks like Al Franken. You know, but if it's, you know, you can get away with a lot when you look like George Clooney. You know what I'm saying?
I know, but again, I always bring up the fact that I think it's when they're lording something over you. You know, I don't know that that's Leanne can sue Al Franken for anything.
Joyless Behar. That sounds straight. She used to do a show here. At times, she was so vile.
Oh, sorry.
Joyless Behar. Anyway, what is it about
guys? I get the
guys?
Point, though.
What is it about guys? It's like when they pull their schlong out and they want to prove to a woman they don't have erectile dysfunction like Louis C.K. What is it about guys also that they feel they have to jam their tongue down the throat of a woman?
I think, you know, it's like that. It's like these Harlequin romance books. You know, some people get into this mindset that they're going to make some, you know, some dashing, gallant, you know, a play for a woman, and it's going to be so romantic. And the fact is, it's just creepy.
Let's quickly go to Leo in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Leo.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Leo.
I just want to make a quick comment. You know what I mean? I truly believe that these laws need to be changed, obviously. You know, instead of making civil agreements prior to the criminal, there should absolutely be criminal agreements or criminal, you know, locked up. And then after being prosecuted and found guilty, then the civil would come afterwards. That's what I truly believe. And believe me, a lot of this nonsense will stop.
Yeah, but Leo, nothing's going to happen here because it happened a while back. There was no actual sexual assault where there was penetration, so he's not going to be hit with a rape charge. Maybe she'll sue him civilly, but the likelihood is that it's probably not going to go anywhere. It will take years and years and years, and it will be very costly for her also.
Absolutely. That's why I'm saying the laws need to be changed right now.
Yeah, it's
obviously the past is the past. The president is
yeah,
right
but
now.
It's not laws. You know, I know what a guy is. You know, I'm a guy. Saltpeter. I keep saying this over and over. If guys would just take saltpeter in their Cheerios in the morning, this is what they did for years in the army and in prison to suppress a male's urge. Saltpeter will take that turgid three-piece set make it flaccid.
So gross.
You will have no desire to glom on, perv, touch yourself, fondle, pleasurize yourself. Saltpeter is the cure. And if not, if you can't keep your rocket in your pocket, castration should be your cure.
Just let's go back into the olden days, like the Victorian times when men asked women if they could kiss them ahead of time. Let's just do it that way.
Oh, please.
Make it easy for everybody.
You really believe that propaganda?
Hey, listen.
There was all-out rape going on then.
All right, listen, 1-800. I know. I'm trying to use a funny example.
848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77-WABC.
Cue the predator apologists now who are on Facebook posting provocative modeling pictures from Leanne Tweeden, who is accusing Al Franken, the senator, of groping her and kissing her when she didn't want to. You can pose bare naked. It doesn't mean that you have the right to grope somebody, by the way. Let's go to the phones now. Russell is calling us from White Plains. Good afternoon, Russell.
Good afternoon. Juliet Huddy, you seem like a very attractive woman, but you seem to be sexually harassing Curtis. So did Ebony and that Doris Day wannabe. And it grates on my nerves.
Okay, I can't control myself. I mean, you're not sitting next to him. You don't have any idea.
I know, but you're better looking than George Clooney. So, you know, please stop. But there's also
my beard is much cuter, though.
There's a host on WABC, Larry Menti, who was convicted of stealing emails and sexually harassing.
And Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Johnny?
Hey, Curtis, how are you?
Curtis, you know, you have a point with that saltpeter. I think that every man goes through a stage of life where their testosterone is out of whack. It could be in their teens. It could be in their 40s. But they have to learn how to control. And to, especially today with all the problems we have here, I think that saltpeter will do it. But, you know, you don't want too much saltpeter. Then, you know, there's no release.
Oh, well, I have no idea what the saltpeter stuff is supposed to be.
Well, let me explain it to you. It's potassium nitrate.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, Juliet Huddy, that if Hillary Clinton could have fed her husband potassium nitrate in his food each day, saltpeter, she might well have become president of the United States.
You think?
Oh, yeah, because let's face it.
So what are they supposed to, what is it a powder or is it a little, what is it?
Yeah, a potassium nitrate. It's a powder. So you mix it into the food. They used to mix it into the mess hall when they would, in the commissary, they would fix the food for the prisoners or in the mess for the U.S. Army or the military. Mm. Because you had all these guys here with testosterone crashing through their cranium,
well, I don't think
mostly
everybody
in their 20s.
I don't think every man, maybe just a few. A few.
What are they, eunuchs? Maybe a few that are eunuchs. But most men, they have these urges, and they get themselves into trouble and get other people into trouble. And I'm telling you,
they're
this would
predators.
Suppress them. This would suppress that urge.
Well,
trust, you got to trust me on this. I'm the guy. You're not. You know, you don't have the same plumbing. I understand how the plumbing. The other cure is to have your prostate taken out.
Oh, yeah.
See, because you no longer have those same desires. Now, if you pop
getting in line for that, I'm sure.
If you pop the Viagra or any of the other sexual enhancement drugs, that changes that. But without your prostate, right,
mm-hmm.
and with no pharmaceutical helpers, you know, like the Beatles said, I need
help.
A little help from my friends.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to have that urge to merge. You're not going to be perving.
And you speak knowingly.
Exactly. I can tell you the difference, the way you relate to women. Both when you have saltpeter and without a prostate.
So you're encouraging men at what age to go out and buy themselves some saltpeter and
well, no, your men will never
get their prostate
men will never put it in their food. Like Ken Duffy would never put it in his food. you would have to have a woman in their life that would mix it into their food. Absolutely. And the man wouldn't know. You couldn't. You can't taste this.
So you're suggesting that I should go home and, you know, maybe stop at the store and buy a little salt, Peter, and just make
well,
sure.
Well, your husband, he's a rock and roller, right?
Yeah.
You better put, like,
no, he's
like
a
into
he's
his
a
meatballs. Half of the meatballs should be made of saltpeter.
Well, he makes the food, so he's.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. The guys are never going to put saltpeter in their own food. But it works. I'm telling you.
Does anybody out there do this besides apparently Curtis?
Oh, no, that's true. It's true. No, but anyway, right now, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
This has become the theme song for Judge Roy Moore, Jerry Lee Lewis, who at the height of his popularity in the rock and roll era married his first cousin who happened to be 13.
Which was a very frequent occurrence back in the, you know, olden times.
Oh, yeah.
Tudor age,
even
Victorian
Elvis.
Age.
You didn't get any bigger than Elvis snacking on 14-year-old girls. As
no, I meant marrying
one.
First cousins.
Well, first cousin, yeah. Rudy Giuliani did that. That was his first wife. But, and very common amongst Italians in a certain time. But, 13?
Yeah.
Jailbait. And I guess Judge Roy Moore heard those same warnings from his peers growing up. Hey, don't go near her. Jailbait.
You know, can I just say something?
Yes.
When I was 16 years old, I went into a bar in Georgetown where you could be 18, but I had a fake ID thing. I went in and I started talking to this guy. Now, I told him originally that I was 21, I think, which I, of course, did not look 21. But he was 23, I believe, and I gave him my phone number, and we actually went on a date. And I remember when I realized that he was 23, and I realized that he found out that I was 16. I was so horrified and so scared, I bolted out of this restaurant, and I don't understand how, if you're that age, if you're so young, how could you even want to be around an older?
Well, you see, we used to call girls like you a big tease.
Well, I didn't know he was 23. I thought he was a little bit younger than that.
What did you think you were going to find in a bar? 16-year-old guys yourself?
You could be 18 and go into bars in Georgetown at a certain point.
No, I understand. But let's face it, you were a tease. You liked teasing.
I was not a tease. I was an angel. They called me Prudy Judy in high school.
Angel.
That's the truth.
You were jailbait.
I thought he was 18.
And you teased this 23-year-old guy. Now, once he realized you were 16, once you fessed up.
He was still interested.
Oh, okay.
Which completely, we both admitted that we had been lying about our ages.
Was he from Alabama?
No, he was. I forget where he's from. Oh, okay. I still remember his name. It still creeps me out beyond belief. I'm like, oh my God. Thank God we were in a public place.
There is a creep list now that both McConnell really in the Senate and Ryan in the House are trying to get hold of. Apparently, there is a list of pervs both in the House and the Senate that they want to get ahead of the curve because, you know, with the midterm elections, they want to do negative research on these guys to vet out all their perverted ways because they know that'll knock them right out of the box.
Think about what we're saying, though. Think about the fact that we are actually saying that our government, people in our government at the highest levels, know that there are perverts, predators within.
Why would within you the Senate, within what Congress? What was JFK? What was but Ted that, Kennedy? That, what
they're
was
protecting
RFK?
Them.
What was
just,
LBJ?
Yeah, but actually having non-disclosure agreements. I mean, going so far as that.
Well, it's a
you think
sign
there were
the
any
times.
Non-disclosure agreements back then? I doubt it.
No, because so, back then the media just kept quiet about
this
it.
This is institutionalized support for predators, and it's coming from the highest offices in the land, which is despicable.
Well, yesterday, Judge Roy Moore's attorney doubled down and said he's not going anywhere and started to attack the woman who claimed that when she was 15, 16 and a waitress in that restaurant in Gadsden, that he perved her.
They both said that Ms. Nelson, after the allegations, had never seen nor had any contact with Judge Moore. As it turns out, in 1999, Ms. Nelson filed a divorce action against her then husband, Mr. Harris. Guess who that case was before? It was filed in Etowah County, and the judge assigned was Roy S. Moore, Circuit Judge of Etowah County. There was contact.
That is not necessarily true. As you and I both know, we've been divorced. I've never gone to see the judge during my divorces. I talked to a lawyer candidate. That was it. You didn't see a judge.
There are two different ways. I remember I've gone a divorce route with Jacoby N. Myers with my first wife, Corinne Drayton. She went with Jacoby. I went with Myers, and we resolved it right there. Mm-hmm. I never saw a judge.
Right.
With Lisa, never saw a judge. That was handled by the attorneys on both sides.
Lisa Evers prominently featured in your documentary, by the way.
And with Mary, actually, Mary Schlierer, I never saw a judge. It was handled by the attorneys. First, you had the separation agreement.
Right.
It was obviously signed by the court. You waited a year.
But if things get contentious, then I see, that's typically when you see people getting into court. Yeah, but for the most part, if it's just kind of a...
But I got to say, Gloria Allred, who I never trust, was asked that question yesterday, like, did she or did she not appear before Judge Roy Moore, because we don't know, and that could have been a slam dunk, would not answer that question.
Well, she probably had to do some research on that. Maybe she was surprised by that. I mean, I'm not defending...
Would the woman Nelson have also had memory loss on that, Sessions and Judge Moore, like everyone in Alabama seems to forget?
Wait, but if she didn't go in front of this guy, so technically this attorney for this attorney that you played the soundbite from said Nelson never had contact with Moore again, never saw her. That technically could be right, but the fact is, there could have been paperwork.
Right, but
she might not have noticed. I don't know who the judges were in my situation.
Very simple yesterday for Gloria Allred, who was doing what she does all the time, like Len Slice, making the rounds of TV appearances. She was asked that question over and over. Did she appear before Judge Roy Moore? She would not answer that question. So I think that could be a problem. Then the attorney for Judge Roy Moore said... talked about the signature in the yearbook.
You may remember on Monday, Ms. Nelson and Ms. Allred, in support, really the only piece of evidence they had in addition to the allegations was a yearbook where they claimed that it had been signed. And they said very specifically, look back at what they said. Everything on that page they said was written by Judge Moore. Now, Judge Moore not only has denied everything she said before, but now flatly denies that. And he says it's not true. We have a handwriting expert, pardon me, that's looking at those. But here's the problem. A handwriting expert can't look at a copy on the internet, right? They've got to look at an original. So right now, Trent Garman, our attorney, has sent a letter or is sending a letter to Gloria Allred demanding that the yearbook be released.
That seems fair. Mm-hmm. And yet Gloria Allred, again, a woman you just can't trust, was filibustering on TV last night over that issue, too.
Can you say flatly to our viewers right now, Gloria, that the signature, what he wrote in that yearbook in 1977, according to her, can you say flatly that was not a forgery?
Well, all I'm saying is we will permit an independent examiner of the writing to look at exemplars of former judge, twice removed from the Alabama Supreme Court judge on account of ethical violations, according to the ethics committee in that state. We will allow all of this to be asked and answered at the hearing.
So basically what she's saying is this is a critical piece of evidence, this yearbook.
Yeah.
And she's saying, no, we're not going to have any sort of investigation into this until you have a Senate hearing before the election.
Well, but a Senate hearing?
Because so basically she's
filibustering. There's no doubt about it. The simplest thing here would be
she's putting politics before the truth is what she's putting
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
The word going around today.
That's why nobody trusts Gloria Allred. But just put the book out to an independent handwriting expert, somebody who's independent and autonomous, mm-hmm. not down in Alabama, and let that man or woman make determination and maybe do it in front of two or three experts together so that they can collaborate. You know,
and you have to get a lot of documents. A lot of documents, because I don't know about you.
Like
I'm potentially schizo because I write so many different ways. I have different signatures.
I understand, but look at what they just paid for that Da Vinci.
Oh, my God. Speaking of
$450 million, you know damn well they had to authenticate that picture.
Yes.
That painting by Da Vinci.
So we need to hire the person who authenticated that Da Vinci and bring them into this.
But there are handwriting experts who can do that. So that's making me think here, a little shaky here, Gloria. How come you're not so forthcoming here? And it's now close to 2 o'clock this afternoon. We still haven't gotten an answer as to whether her client, Ms. Nelson, appeared before Judge Roy Moore in her divorce proceeding. Boy, that's a long time to have your memory nourished.
Well, and you should be able to have the information by then from the courts,
I would imagine.
Yeah, but
you see, it seems everyone in Alabama has difficulty remembering anything. Sessions, Moore, and now possibly the accuser, Nelson. Anyway, let's go to the phones. It's Rich, who's calling from White Plains. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Richie Rich.
Hey, Curtis. How are you doing, Juliet?
All right.
It's Roy Moore who deserves the benefit of the doubt, not the women making the allegations, and here's why. These women are all from Alabama. Roy Moore was elected not once but twice to the Alabama Supreme Court, but these women didn't seem to have any crisis of conscience then. But even if they missed their opportunity to keep this alleged bad man out of a position of power, they could have spoken out during the two primary elections Moore had to win to get to where he is now. But no, they wait 40 years, they wait through all these elections that he won, and come out a month before when he opposes the Democrat. Now, based on that alone, I don't understand why these women are given the benefit of the doubt first and not Roy Moore.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience that many women, many victims, keep their mouths shut because, again, they're worried about going up against a political machine, a media mogul, a wealthy hedge funder, and all that comes with it, which is essentially a machine behind that machine, which is, you know, Harvard-educated lawyers, the best of the best, lots of money. And these women potentially could have seen, I don't know the motivation at this point, but I'm guessing there's a possibility that they've seen what's been happening in the last month or several months with all of these men being toppled down and then corroborating stories.
And then they know that depending on their own past, whatever they've done in their life is going to be subject to all of a sudden be resurrected by negative researchers on behalf of the attorneys that are representing the accused, who then want to sully the reputation of the accuser.
I can tell you that I know people very, very, very close to me who were scared because of that, because there was a lawyer from the other side saying, I'm going to rip you to shreds publicly.
1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Hello.
Let's go to Don in Manhattan. Welcome to WABC. Donnie.
Hi, Curtis, and hi, Juliet. I caught the tail end of what you were talking about with the Judge Moore's yearbook and analyzing the handwriting. That's very much of a subjective thing. I'm in the art world, so I know a little bit about this sort of thing as far as determining forgeries and whatnot. And I can tell you that handwriting analysis, like when you're analyzing a signature of an artist, let's say a Picasso or whatever, to determine if it's real or not or forged, it's a very subjective thing, particularly with someone who's writing, you know, more than just their signature. What really needs to be done, and you can, like I said, you could get a couple of, you could get five or six handwriting specialists, and they could all say, you know, well, this, that, they won't necessarily agree. But what you really need to do is you need to do a forensic analysis of the actual ink so you can determine the age of the ink, pressure on the paper and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if someone put pressure on the book and they wrote in it.
Good point.
If the book's been closed for so long, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, Don, remember, they did that with the Hitler diaries, which proved to be bogus. Remember, they did that deep dive, and they investigated signatures, the whole nine yards, and said the Hitler diaries were bogus. And people were willing to pay millions and millions of dollars for them. So in this case, Don, shouldn't Gloria Allred just give up the yearbook and let an independent group of handwriting experts delve into it?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily going to get into the whole politics behind it, but, you know, if you have to ask me that question, I would say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but see, Gloria Allred is filibustering.
I like the fact that we have art people listening to the show. That makes me happy.
Artsy-fartsy people, huh?
What?
You imagine the people who had to authenticate that Salvador Mundi, the last Da Vinci that sold for $450,000 and say this is the real deal and not a fake, not a knockoff.
Thanks for the calls.
Curtis Lewa. Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour or two. And as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided in order for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. Below us is Penn Station. 700,000 people pour out each and every day. It's a third world transit hub. 700,000 people pour in every night in order to head back to their place of residence. And one of those includes our own Juliet Huddy, who has had it with mass transit.
Well, it's not necessarily I haven't had it. And by the way, I hadn't used really mass transit in the many years that I've been here. And I hadn't used Penn Station at all, the Long Island Railroad. So I'm fairly new to the whole thing. You keep talking about how it's a third world. I actually don't mind Penn Station. I think I'm the only person on the planet that doesn't, but the ceilings are a little low. Yeah, it's a little crowded, but I think there are lots of nice food offerings. The Starbucks people are really nice.
You've ever used the bathrooms?
I went to the tracks the bar tracks to use the bathroom?
No.
Because I couldn't find the bathrooms.
The public lavatories
I don't plan on it either.
Let me tell you, you'd rather go to Bombay, Madras, and Pondicherry in order to relieve yourself in India than to go into the public lavatories. And, you know, the mark of a civilized society is public lavatories. Like, for instance, it reminds me, I was in Grand Central Station this Saturday. And, you know, it's going to really get crowded once Thanksgiving comes and Christmas.
It's just
packed.
The craziest time of the year.
It'll be bumper to bumper, back to back, nut to butt. And I went into the men's room, and half the toilet stalls did not work. There were homeless and emotionally disturbed people in there.
Oh, see, that's, yeah.
There were pervs with their eyes on the back of straight guys who were at the urinals.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're just perving out guys. And the smell.
God.
And you said to yourself, and yet they keep building more and more of these food courts. And then the women's bathroom, they were out around. It was a 20-minute wait.
Yeah, welcome to hell.
Right, so you say to yourself, the MTA, which runs Grand Central Station.
Metro, what is it, a
money-taking agency.
Yes.
Why wouldn't they build larger and better bathroom facilities for their commuters, especially for the women who have to wait online like cattle?
Well, how about, I mean, that's the age-old joke. I mean, you go to football games, you go to concerts, the lines are out the door down the street. But very quickly, here's the thing. In Italy, I know, you have to pay to go into bathrooms. In certain other countries in Europe, you have to pay, whatever, 25 cents
to go into the bathroom. They often do have a bathroom attendant.
And these are public bathrooms at the train stations, but you don't run into problems like that. I mean, I hate to say it. I'm sorry that there are homeless people that don't have anywhere to go. They have to go to a shelter.
I hate saying that because I sound so... I'm at the central train station downtown Copenhagen, right outside of where all the dope fiends are. There's like 10 blocks of just straight dope fiends there.
Yep.
And so there's a men's bathroom attendant there. I go to the public facility, a lot of stalls, a lot of urinals, a lot of sinks. So, you know, plenty of space for anyone who needs it. And apparently there was a man and a woman having sex in one of the stalls. So the men's bathroom attendant takes his mop and he starts hitting the stall because you hear them going,
He opens the stall.
I'm looking through the mirror because I'm washing my hands, singing happy birthday to me, happy birthday
Perving
to me to make
out,
sure that I'm washing appropriately. And they go running out. But there they also had Barbasol. They had combs, you know, the combs
like,
in the
it's
Barbasol.
It's like clubs when you go clubbing down in, wherever the kids go clubbing anymore.
It's civilized.
I know.
But anyway, before we get into that, let's give our phone numbers out because there are going to be a series of questions that you have about mass transit. Juliet Huddy, the new Jack, the rookie. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Okay.
But we must go to the press conference that Bobby Menendez, the capo di tutti of all crooks up on the Hill as a U.S. senator, had. And he actually thanked Dominic Carter, who is here on Mondays with
me. Oh, my God. Yes, I know this.
For the release.
I know why.
For his release. Listen to this. As he thanks everybody. But he specifically points out Dominic Carter.
To those who have a doubt, I'm going to work harder than ever before so that there is no doubt. To those in the press who did their job and did it with professionalism, and even to some of you who are actually kind, where's Dominic? I believe you showed others what a professional press is all about.
You see that?
So what did he do exactly that Senator Menendez is so...
Oh, he did puff pieces on him. Puff pieces. You know, he's
don't
on...
Say, you know, you work with Dominic. Don't say that he does puff pieces.
No, he does. RNN, Fios One. You see him every Monday through Friday.
Well, this is going
to
be awkward having
to
him be back here Monday.
But out of all the reporters there, you know, there's an international national press corps. Because remember, this affected the DR also. Remember, he used to be the head of the Foreign Relations Committee, Bobby Menendez, when the Democrats were in charge of the Senate. And so they were all assembled. And who does he point out for accolades and special attention and recognition for being so nice to him in the press? Dominic Carter. What a double disgrazia. What a double shanda. We'll be talking about this more on the drive home at 5 tonight. But
you know what? Well, hold on. You know how many tweets I get about from people saying, you don't cover the Senator Menendez. The mainstream media doesn't cover Senator Menendez's trial. And what's wrong with you people? Blah, 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 there's this conspiracy. I'm like, why are they not listening to the show? I mean, and by the way, look at the massive amount of press that was gathered there. There's a ton of press covering him.
Yeah, but
I'm so sick of people whining about this stuff.
I think when it comes to Bobby Menendez, there's a universal hate for the guy. Democrats don't like him. They know that this guy's a scuzz. First off, he is the head of the most corrupt Democratic county machine in America.
Hudson County. Yep.
He was corrupt as a congressman, corrupt as a U.S. senator. And remember, what wasn't a part of this trial, what wasn't a part of this trial and should have been, remember when those Dominican hookers went up on YouTube and they were describing how they took Bobby Menendez around the world in 80 seconds and what a cheapskate he was?
Were they models or were they?
Models. They were hookers. Yeah. They were prostitutes. And they were complaining that when they serviced him in the DR, because it was Melgin, his benefactor, his Medici, who would fly him back and forth from Washington or Jersey to the DR in which he would hook up with the hookers, that he wouldn't even tip them. That he was so cheap,
I mean,
he threw nickels
at
around,
least
pesos
if you're be
around
hooking
like manhole
up,
covers,
tip him.
Wouldn't even tip him. And then
How much does one tip a hooker? I'm just curious.
Well, I've never been with a hooker. So
okay, I'm calling bull on that one.
No, I've never been with a hooker.
Oh, I heard all these young New York boys, they all experiment. They go down into the, you know.
I didn't need to be introduced to sex through a hooker. I know a lot of fathers will actually take sons. At least it used to be a tradition in order for them to have their first experience because they want them to be with an experienced woman. And they figure if they paid them, even if the boy was not able to function correctly, it wouldn't scar him because the prostitute
Brian, Justin, any comments about this over there?
No, it's the old tradition. Okay, my father, he didn't believe in that. Even though he was a merchant seaman, he didn't have tattoos, he didn't curse, he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't frequent prostitutes. He was he was so different than a typical merchant seaman. And he was a merchant seaman for 46 years.
He was very handsome, by the way. Lots of great pictures of him and an interview in your documentary, Vigilante.
Oh, yeah. And he's one of the features in that. Meantime, what are some of your other beefs since you've been taking the LIRR?
I'm actually curious what people have to say about this because I feel like I'm kind of being, am I allowed to say the B word?
B-I-T.
I feel like I'm kind of being a bitch. I can tend to be that way.
I can tell everybody, having worked with you for many years at Good Day Early Call, New York, in the wee morning hours, you are a diva and a bitch.
Okay, I'm not a diva. I can be a bitch. But about certain things. But so when I'm sitting on the train, you know, there's especially when it's busy, obviously you're sitting very close to people. If there's somebody on the phone next to me, even if it's across me, I'm like, blah, 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 you know, like that is just, and it drone on and on. Like, it's not really that loud or anything. It's almost as though they're having a conversation with the person next to them, except it's on the phone. But why does that bug me so much? They could easily be having a conversation with the person next to them at the same decibel level, saying the same things. But because they're talking on the phone, it makes me crazy. It makes me mental. Like, I want to grab the phone and throw it, out the window.
You're speaking of your experience on the LIRR.
On the Long Island Railroad. Yes.
I've experienced a little differently on New Jersey Transit. They have, like, a quiet car as part of the train. And on Amtrak, you know, you
On Amtrak, I know that.
And if you break the rules on that train, all of a sudden the conductor goes crazy if you're in the quiet car.
I haven't seen any signs on any car that I've ever been in on the LIRR.
Long Island Railroad has a quiet car. Because everybody's loud and abrasive, and they're off the hook on the Long Island Railroad.
They do?
They have a quiet car,
Brian. Which ones are they?
Well, I've never known anyone to be quiet on the Long Island Railroad.
So
they're like a bunch of yentas.
The conductor. Well, the conductor's walking around, and I don't know. I've never seen anything. But it's not like it's really that bothersome on peak trains. Oh, all right. Well, it just annoys me. I guess I'm just being a bitch.
I think Brian is making this up.
I think he might
really
be making
it.
I don't think he seems sort of like shake himself.
Yeah, because they let you drink on the Long Island Railroad train, right? You're sloshed, you're out of control, you're talking trash.
Yeah, that actually surprised me because I saw we were going to, I think, a concert, and these guys get on, these like 20-something guys, looking fratty looking. They were totally fine. But they had, they were carrying their beers, and they were just popping the beers up, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to get in so much trouble. Look, here comes the guy taking tickets. And it was there was no big deal. I was like, wait, what? You can drink on the... This is like heaven. That's like a little heaven, a little moving heaven.
You've never taken a Long Island Railroad train in the summer back to the city when all the hipsters and millennials are coming back from the Hamptons on the weekends.
No.
And they're wild, debaucherous, crazy, and completely out of control.
On the way back? Usually they're like, oh, yeah, we're so tired. We
No. They're crazed, yeah. And a lot of them go out and they get drunk as skunks.
Well, they keep the party going on the train.
The train, screaming, hollering, urinating, right out there in the middle of the aisle. You see the Blue Lagoon. They go into the bathrooms. They never work, and they flush, and then the Blue Lagoon comes rushing right down the middle of the aisle. So if you have any luggage or you're carrying anything, you got to pick it up real quick.
Yeah. I haven't seen that yet. I'm anticipating a fun time, a delightful time. But people who eat on the train. Okay, so I stopped off at that Pret-a-Manger, and I got a little mini salad type of thing.
Oh, you know, mini salad.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't know, just what's it called? Quinoa.
Whatever that.
And
hell.
Some little edamames, and it was delicious. But it doesn't have a scent to it, and so I don't think I was bothering anybody. But then people bring on things that are highly scented. You know, such as tuna fish sandwiches.
Kimchi.
Lots of strange smells.
Kimchi, that's the worst. That garlic is kicking.
Or egg. Like, egg is not the best smell on a train.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering what the story is with that. Is it permitted, first of all? Are you allowed to eat on the train? And if you are, should you just not do it anyway?
Yeah, you can nosh on the train. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Huntington. Welcome to Curtis. And that's right, the new Jack Long Island Railroad writer herself, Juliet, the diva girl, Huddy.
Choo-choo.
What's happening, Curtis? Welcome to the show, Juliet. Happy to hear you back on the airwaves.
Thank you.
Whether radio or TV. And real quick, got to throw the horns up, because I know you're a big heavy metal fan.
Yes.
That being said, we're forgetting one thing. The worst thing about the Long Island Railroad are the conductors.
Why?
Who needs their ticket clipped twice in 2017?
What does
that
mean?
On top of that, they're rude. You get on, they take your ticket, and then right around Jamaica, they take your ticket again. So your ticket needs to get clipped twice.
Unless you have like the weekly pass and the monthly pass, and you just flash it to the conductor.
They always take.
You'd have to flash it twice then.
Oh, see, I've not experienced that. I get my one way ticket, and
Mike,
then they clip it and they take it.
You understand what that's about? That's called job security.
Yes. Well, what I'm saying is kind of like the toll booth collector. That is a thing of the past. Let's go to MetroCard and let's get the Long Island Railroad running on time.
Yes. Yeah, because why do you, and not only that, when they clip the tickets.
I love it when they go, then I love that sound.
That little Chad, just
Chad,
like remember,
the hanging Chad, yeah.
Will fall onto the floor. So now you got the litter of all the Chads on the floor. So you need extra maintenance in order to pick up the Chads. And you say how primitive that is.
Keeping people employed.
Job security.
Yeah, personal grooming. That I think we can all agree on. Don't clip your toenails. I beg of you. And that I did see that happen. Not on the LIRR.
On the Long Island Railroad.
No, not on the LIRR, but I saw it coming back from a concert at Barclays. There was somebody,
clipping,
and actually a fairly normal-looking man.
Clipping their toenails
clipping
on the train.
And I just sat there. I'm like, should I say something? Or am I going to get beaten up? Like what? But I started giving him the look.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
Juliet Huddy in the house. You know, in addition to the many beefs we've just spewed forth about transit, especially Penn Station, Grand Central Station, on Saturday, there were a group of these young men, and they had these signs, these cardboard signs, you know, with the Sharpies. They had put hugs.
Mm-hmm. Not drugs?
No, just hugs.
Oh, okay.
And so they're expecting people to come up to them and hug them. So I'm looking intently. I'm seeing there's three of these guys, right? And they look like pervs to me. They really
do. What does a perv look like? You've said this a couple of times.
Well,
you I'm just
tell.
Curious.
Like Al Franken. Al Franken. Judge Moore. I mean, Harvey Weinstein.
They always seem to have shiny lips.
Yeah.
Don't they? Like
pervs.
Shiny lips.
And they're just their eyes are just too intent. You know, it's like to score.
And I've noticed their eyes are always, like, they always seem to be, like, on either side of their head.
Yeah.
Like, they've got the wide set eyes. Like,
I saw some of these naive women going up and grabbing hugs, and I saw this one guy cop a feel on her tuchus. So
what?
I go up to, yeah, he copped a feel. And the woman didn't feel it because it was cold Saturday. She had on the heavy
jacket.
Clothing. You know, I mean, it was like 20 degrees.
Who are these people?
So I go up to the guy and say, I took his cardboard sign, I ripped it up, and I told him, get the hell out of here. You and your two homeboys, get the hell out
Did
of here.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Because they were perving.
How old were they?
I would say probably between 18 and 22.
Oh, man. Yeah, they know exactly what they're doing.
Oh, and here are these naive women. They don't know these guys.
Why would any woman go up to some stranger and let them...
You should have seen them lining up to get hugs.
You're kidding me.
I am not kidding. They do this all the time. I've seen them do it in Times Square, Penn Station, Grand Central Station, the Port Authority. They're pervs. But anyway, let's go to Sue, who's been patiently waiting on the line from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here at WABC. Sue.
Hey, Juliet.
Hey,
Long
Sue.
Live Rock, my girlfriend.
Woo-hoo!
How are you?
Good.
My Polish prince over there. You're ragging on Long Island. What is it? I got to call and yell at you. Here I'm feeling sorry. The surgery's coming up. You have this wonderful documentary. I'm starting to have, like, pangs of, oh, Curtis, okay, got to be nice to him. And now look what you did. We're yentas. We're sloshed on the train. You know, it's bad enough taking the train. What do you got to go there
Well, that's
for?
What I'm saying. And remember, I'm at war with the MTA money-taking agency.
I know.
That's who he's going against. He's not attacking Long Islanders. I'd stab him with my heel.
Have you ever had to change over trains at Jamaica Station?
Of course. Okay. I was a 15-year commuter. Yes,
okay.
I have.
So,
yes.
You know, that is a miserable experience there.
Yes. It never has and it never will. It was 20 years ago.
But it could be if you travel the world and you see these transit hubs and you see how magnificent they are, even in third world countries, and you say, and this is the best we could do as a hub Jamaica Station for the Long Island Railroad Dashing Dance and Dashing Danielles?
Brian is right. There are quiet cars, but how can Long Islanders be quiet, right?
Exactly, because they're all freaking Yentas, like you,
quiet.
Sue, and like Diva Girl here. Anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Maybe I'm not too fast.
Yes, you are. 2:37. Juliet Huddy in the house today.
Hello.
And Juliet, you know, us guys, we have these midlife crises that we go through.
Crises. Women have them crises. Too, I think.
Yeah, but I don't think they're as accentuated as when guys, they
well,
really
I think our midlife
flip the script.
Crises are, it's like menopause.
Yeah. And then you want to stay away from y'all because it's
not
like.
Not necessarily.
Intense.
Well, you know, some of us.
You know, the claws come out. You're tough to deal with.
I was way worse to deal with when I was younger.
You really think so?
Trust me. Oh, believe me.
But anyway, there's now a new trend amongst, that's right, Justin B. Love and Brian Mongoluch, the hipsters and millennials, that life is so difficult for hipsters and millennials that they are now taking a quarter life crisis. A quarter-life crisis, which means that I guess in their 30s, it's a quarter-life crisis.
Well, here's the thing. I think the story that we're kind of basing this conversation off of, I think it's been twisted around a little bit by the New York Post headline writers, which the headline is, majority of millennials claim to be in a quarter-life crisis. The fact is that it was a LinkedIn survey of 2,000 millennials, ages 25 to 33. And they say that 72% of them say that they have had, over the last few years, a period of self-doubt and insecurity that has caused them to question their life choices, relationships, and career paths. Mm. Now, I am a Gen Xer, and I had those moments, too, when I was between the ages of 25 to 33. Actually, millennials are 18 to 34, but for the survey's sake, it was 25 to 33. I had those questions. I had, you know, these moments when I would sit at home going, have I done the right thing? Did I marry the right person? Clearly no. You know, did I choose the right career path? Potentially not. You know, I think it's normal. That's a very normal thing. I think the headline writers here have made it seem like it's a lot more dramatic.
Well, let's find out, because certainly the bulk of our listeners are baby boomers, and they've gone through a midlife crisis. And
We're bringing in the kids.
Exactly what that's about. And then the Generation Xers, they've had their crisis, and now we have millennials and hipsters who are claiming that they have a quarter-life crisis. What exactly is that, and how severe a change in your life did you take when you had that midlife crisis? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Well, we know that Senator Bobby Menendez, the capo di tutti, the crook of all crooks on Capitol Hill.
I could see him driving like a Corvette around.
No. His midlife crisis was he hooked up with the infamous Dr. Melgen, who was ripping off Medicare as an ophthalmologist in Florida.
Convicted of...
Well, that's right. Melgen became his benefactor, his Medici, and kept flying him to the DR so that he could hook up with DR hookers there at many of their vacation extravagandas, you know, all along the coast.
Lovely resorts down there.
And he did that many times. But did you hear what Ken Duffy just played? How Bobby Menendez was saying he was a victim of racial profiling by the FBI?
Certain elements of the FBI and of our state cannot understand or even worse accept that the Latino kid from Union City and Hudson County can grow up to be a United States senator and be honest.
That is despicable that he's saying that.
Well, you know why it's despicable? Because Cubans, as Latinos, have always been treated differently than, let's say, the ones we're most used to in our region, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and those now who are here from Central and South America. Totally different. Look at Ricky Ricardo. Remember?
Yes, of course.
Married to Lucille Ball.
Yes.
People don't realize how successful he was.
Desi Arnaz.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Desi Lou Productions.
Mm-hmm.
He had so many shows on at one time. He was like the go-to guy for developing shows. And, okay, his skin was light. If he were a dark-skinned Cuban like Mini Minoso, the great baseball player from the Chicago White Sox, dark as any African-American, that would be different. But if you have the complexion of a Bobby Menendez and you're a Cuban, you're treated differently than other Hispanics are by those both in the Latino community and outside of
and
the
Latino
community.
And you say this because the Guardian Angels have, I mean, you get your membership through many, many different countries
I've seen this down in southern Florida. I've seen this in Hudson County, especially along Bergenline Avenue in Union City. And Bobby Menendez was the shot caller. He was the one appointing judges.
Yeah, I mean, this is his excuse, and this is just typical. It's typical politics. It's typical Hudson County politics, which we all know is the most corrupt county.
Right. The FBI
maybe on the planet
was targeting him because he was a Latino. And by the way, guess who's called for an investigative ethics commission hearings involving Bobby Menendez?
Give me a choice. I don't know.
Mitch McConnell. That's right. So he's going to have an ethics committee hearing of, they can be side by side, Al Franken.
Mm-hmm.
He's now going to have an ethics commission hearing of Bobby Menendez. Why doesn't he just have a truth and reconciliation commission in which they come forward and admit all of their sins of which there are many?
Yeah, give them a couple cocktails and let them just, you know, the truth comes out. Or hook them up to a polygraph and let them answer some questions.
Anyway, our number is 1-800-848-WABC. And before we go to the phones about a midlife crisis, apparently Judge Roy Moore has really stuck his foot up his tuchus.
What now?
Today he said he was happy that Mitch... I love my Kentucky bourbon. McConnell is doing an ethics commission investigation of Al Franken in the Senate.
Spoke too soon on that one, didn't you, Judge?
So then the reporters who were gathered around said, but Judge Roy Moore, do you realize if you get elected to the Senate, because you're not bowing out, and it doesn't look like you're going to bow out, if you happen to win, then Mitch McConnell will do an ethics commission investigation of you. And immediately there was silence. There was like crickets. Could you be any more of an idiot than Judge Roy Moore?
Well, I guess he figures he'd like a few days in office as opposed to no days in office. I mean, they'll find out the truth no matter what.
What a moron. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Anthony, who's calling from Orange County. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Anthony.
How you guys doing? Anthony, huh?
Anthony.
Spaghetti day.
Yeah, no, that's my son's name, oldest son's name. I call him Anthony, and my grandfather on the Polish side, he was Anton, but that's really Anthony.
I don't want to get off the subject, but I can, don't take this the wrong way, but I cannot believe you are still around after all these years. You caused so much trouble in the city, positively, and you're still around. I give you a lot of credit for that.
You have to go see the documentary that was done on him, the founder of the Guardian Angels, Curtis Sliwa, and the Guardian Angels. It's called Vigilante. It'll be out. You'll find out more information on it. It's fantastic.
Can I buy a hat on eBay or something?
Ah, Red Beret. Well, maybe eventually, yeah.
Just become, you know, become a Guardian Angel.
Design a Red Beret.
I saw the movie. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, listen, our midlife crisis, you know, everybody goes through a midlife crisis. You just have to do like Michael Jackson said. You got to look in the mirror. I mean, we're going through quarter life crisis, half crisis, eighth of a life crisis. You got to pay attention. These people that label everything are out of their mind.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Got a problem, find a way to fix it. Don't shoot yourself. Don't shoot somebody. Don't steal. Just do what you got to do, you know?
Well, I think, Anthony, wouldn't you acknowledge for men, I can't speak for women, Julia, maybe you can, but the classic sign of a man going through a midlife crisis was he'd be driving around in a Datsun, you know, just a regular beat-up Datsun, and then all of a sudden you would see him in a red or a canary yellow Corvette.
And he'd be much more tan.
Yep.
And he would have lost some weight. He doesn't come home quite as early as he used to.
But that's a classic sign when you see such an amazing turnaround and you say, hey, Phil.
What's happened?
Yeah, what's happened? And he goes, I feel like I've been liberated. And it usually happens at the time that the kids are going to college.
Yeah, the empty nest thing. You're looking at each other going, wait, we've been together for 25 years and you're kind of boring
and
the hell out of me now.
It's usually the car.
The car is the giveaway.
For men. That's the giveaway. What would you say is the giveaway for the women? A facelift?
The boyfriend.
The boyfriend, no. A facelift?
A plastic surgery, for sure. Yeah. You know, and feeling very confident with the fact that you're doing plastic surgery. Who cares?
I never.
If you feel you look better, why not?
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to John, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet. How do you hear, Johnny?
Curtis and Juliet, hello there. Listen, I think Menendez smoked some really good stuff down in the Dominican Republic. The trial started September, and the election wasn't until November. So Obama's president, Lynch is attorney general. Which one's the racist? Explain to me.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. You had Barack Obama, you had Eric Holder and Lynch, and clearly they were targeting a Latino.
They went after him.
But that doesn't work for his narrative, you see.
Stop smoking pot and wake up.
But then, remember, John, he also had the excuse that I was opposed to the deal with Iran, and that's why this prosecution was waged against me, because I defied Barack Obama as a Democratic
right,
senator.
That's right.
And at the time, the head of the Foreign Relations Committee of the U.S. Senate when the Democrats were in the majority.
So, basically, Lynch is a racist, and Obama's a racist.
Well, you know what? When all those trips that he was going to Punta Cana, and if anyone has ever been to the DR, Punta Cana, it's one of many luxury resorts there that are dotted all over the coast of the island. You can't go out, and people will sell you smoke right there on the beach. So I'm thinking to myself.
It seems very risky to me.
In the DR?
Well, yeah, you don't know what you're getting.
Well,
I mean, it could be some creepy guy selling you oregano or something.
No.
Nah, God knows.
Not like here. They're because they want you to be a customer. They know you're staying like a week or more.
So they know that they're going to be seen again.
Right, right. And okay. They don't want to screw tourists because tourists pay in American dollars or euros, depending on where they're coming from.
So in other words, if you want to smoke pot, just go down the DR.
Well, not just the
feel
DR.
Comfy.
A lot of the West Indian Caribbean countries, it's the same thing. You go out on the beach, and they're walking up and down, and they're not only selling, like, mangoes, you know, and coconuts. Hey, you want some reefer? You want some reefer here?
You want some weed?
You mean that never happened with you when you went on vacation many times?
Uh-uh. I don't go down to the Caribbean. That's not my thing. I like Europe.
You strike me as either lying or being so hopelessly naive.
There's a little bit of both in there.
Let's go to Chris in Long Island about midlife crisis. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here, Chris.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Hey, Chris.
I'm a suffer of a 10-year-old divorce, but one thing I learned, when a man goes through a midlife crisis, they get a nice car. They get a haircut, they lose weight, they get some hot little chippy on the side. But then they wake up and they realize one day when they're married, like, what am I doing? I'm screwing up.
Yep.
And they throw it all away. But the women, and I hate to say this, but it's true, over 63% of all divorces come from women. Women turn around, they just change their whole lives. They dump the men. They push the kids off to their grandparents, and they go and they do stuff that I can't even say in the radio.
Oh, my, my. Do we have some experience
with
this?
Yeah, they go down to Jamaica, right? They go down
to
Jamaica.
I'm sorry to hear that, Chris.
They lay out on the beach. They discover guys who look like Bob Marley there. They befriend them because, you know, it's sex for sale. They smoke ganj, and all of a sudden they have the thrill of their life. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't. I don't know that that's what our last caller was actually saying, but okay.
But
you took it to
another
level.
He said he couldn't describe it on the radio, but I certainly can. You've never seen that?
No, because I don't go down to the islands very much.
I got to tell you, in the times I've been to the West Indies and the Caribbean, the women, mostly white women, but not exclusive to white women, would lay out on the beach. They're by themselves.
Well, that's where it stops me. I don't lay out on the beach. I hate that.
You can see that they're like in their midlife crisis, and one of the beach boys come up to them, and then all of a sudden they have the urge to merge. They're smoking reefer. They're partying for the week, and then they go home. And it's like they never met that guy before in their life. They just go on a fling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I do know that that has happened with certain people in my social circle.
Oh, really? Really?
Tangential people, not close
people.
But
not you, huh?
No, 1-800. Absolutely. No, I'm not.
848. Yeah, you're a nun.
It's not
a real
bag.
Nun. WABC.
It's not my gig.